Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
So it is Advent, and I am a big fan of Christmas, and I thought naturally a great way to talk about Advent is about sand dunes, right? And chanting with strangers, because obviously that makes perfect sense. I was in Colorado with my family, and we're visiting some friends, the Fulmans, and they're pastors. They are pastors in Colorado, and we're hanging out. And I'm so excited because I love them. I'm in the mountains, and it's so great. And all of a sudden, they're like, "Hey, this afternoon we thought we'd take you to the sand dunes." And I was like a clown on the outside. I was like smiling, like, "Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun." On inside, I was like dark, depressed, angry. You know, just like, oh, because. Like, there's mountains all around us. I don't want to see some, like, little hills of sand, right? Like, that doesn't sound like any fun, but I'm a really great human being, so I went and lied and said I was excited and went on, right? And the whole time driving out there, I didn't have the best attitude, because in my mind, I'm thinking, like, if you're familiar with Park Point on the shores of Lake Superior, and, like, those little hills, I'm like, we're going to go look at them and touch them and say, this is so fun. And it was, like, an hour and a half drive, too. So I'm talking with my friend Ben in our really cool minivan, and we come around the corner, and all of a sudden, you see the sand dunes. Has anyone ever seen the national park, the sand dunes? Right? Exactly. You're probably thinking, this is a weird story. But I came around the corner, and have you ever seen something so unexpected, so large, like so captivating that it stopped you? Like where it demands respect, and you just take it in? We came around that corner, and I remember seeing it, and these sand dunes are like mountains. They're huge, and they go on forever. And so it's right along all these mountains, and it's this national park, and it really did stop me. And so we drive in, and you get to go climb up these sand dunes, and you can slide down them and jump, and we had the most amazing time, which obviously leads me to chanting with strangers. I was at this gathering, like this spiritual gathering with some of my friends, and I had no idea what to expect. And I'm sitting in the balcony, and these speakers come out, and I thought they were going to, like, present information. And then I would go, I agree or I disagree. And then we'd laugh, and then we'd leave, right, like most conferences. And the way they start this gathering is that you had to go around and tell people, strangers, right? You walk up to a stranger, and you tell them, you are loved exactly who you are. And they said that, I'm like, okay, they're going to do that to people. Like, no, we are going to do it. Now, if this is your first time here, or if you've ever been a first-time person or visited a church, one of the, like, rule number one to never do as a church planter is to have any new people stand up in the middle of the service, all right? Say, hey, it's your first time here, stand up so we can all silently judge you, all right? That's... Right? That's kind of how it works. So, and you don't like have people go around and meet each other because if you're an introvert, you don't want to like all of a sudden be labeled as a new person. And this, I'm a high extrovert, but when I go to like these conferences, I just want to like come in, I want to learn, and I want to go. And so when they said that, I'm like, we're going to do this. So I walked around saying, yeah, you're beautiful just the way you are, and had to touch people that I didn't know. And then we had to do another one. We had to go around and brag about yourself. That's honestly, they're like, go around and tell people what you're really good at. It's like an exercise. And I'm like, okay, all right. And so finally, like they did another exercise. I'm like, hey, this is gonna not be like a conference where we're talking. We're gonna be like hanging out and touching strangers apparently. So I start making my way downstairs and I'm about to leave. And I'm like, no, I'm just gonna stick around. This lady, Lisa, is gonna come out. And Lisa gets up and she begins to share. She goes, we're going to chant together. And everything inside me was like, yeah, this is so amazing, said no one ever, right? It was, I'm like, I don't know how to chant, right? Is it short chants, is it long chants, and who's chanting, and can I fake the chant, or but I decided to stay, and she began to tell the story of where this came from, that she gets women together at these retreats. And these women are very diverse, from people who have been abused, people who are thriving and flourishing, people who are disconnected from the divine, to a whole array of feelings and situations. And she begins to chant the word shalom, where she just sings it. And the whole idea, and we just talked about shalom, we talked about peace. The whole idea is that you can be hurt, angry, mad, And shalom is not, your anger, your rage is not a threat to that. You could be happy. You could be bored. You could be super excited. And shalom is for everyone. And when you sing it, she said, you can yell it out. You could scream it out. You could whisper it. You could do a four-part harmony with yourself, if that's possible. Or you could do all those things, because collectively, shalom is for everyone in all places. And she said that, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. And she started to sing shalom. And everyone's like, shalom, like a monk, right? And she started it, and then all 400 of us all of a sudden like picked up with her. And there's something, I don't even know what the word. There's something heavenly about singing with people and then singing this word shalom, of the deep mystical peace of heaven itself. And in an unexpected way, I experienced heaven. I was not anticipating experiencing God in that moment, especially after touching strangers and saying, you're beautiful just the way you are. I don't know you, all right? Then to all of a sudden have this like thin moment with God where heaven and earth are very close. Like, I had unexpected moments with sand dunes and an unexpected moment with God through chanting with strangers. And that's what Advent's about. We have an unexpected God. And he shows up in unexpected ways. And God shows up in expected ways as well. And that's really healthy. That's really good. Like, that's called, we call them disciplines. Things that you know are life-giving. Things that are going to feed your soul. Like, for me, I go running. I try running at least 4 or 5 times a week because I feel good. And then I listen to some encouraging speakers and authors and comedians where I laugh. And all that, I realize that I experience God through that. Maybe it's reading your Bible. Maybe it's praying. Maybe it's going for a walk. Maybe it's like asking someone to pray for you. You just expect, pray for me. I'm going to expect that I'm going to hear God. But there's a threat to this as well. There's a shadow side of when you set up your rhythms and you set up how, like your disciplines, there's also the shadow side is then we can entrench ourselves a little too much where we think, well, this is the only way that I can experience God. You've been here before? It's like, no, I have to read this version of this Bible. Anything outside of that is going to be a threat. Or we have to sing these kind of worship songs. Or I need this worship leader to sing. Or I need this person to speak. Or I only listen to this, or read this author. And anything outside of that, you think, well, God can't show up in that experience. God can't show up in those kind of people. God won't show up at this time because this is when it's holy, right? This is very, very normal, especially in churches where we isolate ourselves as a church, as a community, or even as a family or as an individual, saying this is what works and this is what doesn't. This is what's holy and this is what's evil. And really, like Paul speaks to this, right? Like I'm going to wrap up like why we're talking about this in Advent soon, right? But this is what Paul says. He says in 1 Corinthians 3, so then, no more boasting about human leaders. All things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, or the world or life or death or the present or the future, all are yours. And you are of Christ and Christ is of God. What Paul is saying here is this. It's all connected. All of us. All of us are all connected. God is in every single element in the entire universe. Every square inch belongs to the divine. And at this time, the church was like celebrating, no, I can only learn from Paul. I can only learn from Apollos. And if you don't follow Apollos, then you are less than or evil or out. And Paul's saying, hey, like that's not how it works. All things are yours. What a bold statement, right? Whether the present or the future, the world, life, or death, everything in this universe, all of it is yours. If you're willing to receive it, if you're willing to learn. So we can go anywhere in this life and experience a good and beautiful God. And all this wraps up from sand dunes to chanting to Paul to talking about all things are yours, because this is Advent. This is the Magi, obviously. And you knew where I was going, right? You're like, totally, you're talking about the Magi, right? Because the Magi, the whole story of the Magi, you know, like with the star and they're going, and the song, we three kings, like just so you know, there wasn't three kings. There was like tons and tons and tons of people. But the Magi story doesn't make sense. It's totally unexpected. Actually, if you think, the whole Christmas story doesn't make sense. It's all unexpected. Virgin birth, those words don't go together, right? Virgin birth. Then you have God coming in the form of a vulnerable, needy baby that is completely, the divine is dependent on two poor nobodies. That's really who they were. Like, it would make more sense if the divine came as strong and like, I'm going to take the world, right? Like, it comes a different way. Then you have like the God, the first people to talk about to the world about the about Jesus, about the Messiah, is the angels choose shepherds, nobodies, right? Kind of like low class, just like, just get them in a field, get them away from us. We don't want to smell you anymore, right? God shows up to them and the angels go to the world. And then you have the Magi. There's a star. And somehow they know from like from miles and miles and miles and miles and miles away, they're like, oh, yes, that must be Jesus. We're going to that, right? Complete outsiders. The whole story of Advent is unexpected. And so I want to hit on a couple of things about this unexpected God, this unexpected story. And the first is that we have unexpected outsiders. These Magi, all right? They practice like, we call it like, oh, like the dark arts, which just sounds really cool. I like saying that, right? They're very mystical. They understood the stars, and people sought them for their advice because it was different. And they traveled all around. They were like a nomadic group, like a tribe. And there's a large, depending on what scholar you're talking about, there's like 100. Some people believe it could get up to 300. And when they traveled, it was an experience, right? When they traveled, people knew where they were, because when they came into town, it was an event. And people would go to them and say, well, what does this mean? And can you read my future? And they would use science. They'd use math. They'd use the stars. But it'd be a little bit different. So like one thing that we see about the Magi is that they see the stars. Oh, you know what? I was supposed to read the Bible. I'm a horrible pastor. All right, I'm going to read you the story of Magi. Just realize I blew right. That's the most important part. All right, so I'm going to be reading out of Matthew 2. I went right through it. 2, 1 through 12. And I'm going to read. It's a little bit longer, so buckle up. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi, who came from the east to Jerusalem, and asked, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem, in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. Verse 6. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report back to me so that I too may go and worship him. Wink, wink. After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. They opened up their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to the country by another route. So, that's the story of the Magi. And these Magi were outsiders to the point because that they could read the skies because they used like this mystic science. So, like this was a common belief. They believed at this time, because science was, like the way we view science and math and all that stuff, they believed in a different lens. Let's just say that. So a common belief for them was whatever happened in the heavens, if it manifested in the heavens, it would manifest itself on earth. And so at one point when Nero was the emperor in Rome, a star came or a comet, and someone interpreted it like a prophet saying, oh, it manifested on in the heavens. So, Nero, there's going to be a prominent person who's also going to crash, who's also going to die. And they believed this. This was like, oh, that is true. That is fact. That is science, right? Not fake news. It's real news, right? So Nero did what any good emperor would do. He killed all the prominent people around him, right? Because the prophecy, if I take care of enough people, maybe it will like skip me. And that is science, as we can all understand, right? So that's how they operated. And so it is this very act, this very art, this very way that was common, this science, is what kept these people as outsiders from the Israelites. Because we hear the story and we're like, oh, it's so cool. They showed up and they partied with Jesus and gave him some stuff, all right? Because of who they were extreme outsiders. In our sacred scriptures, it talks about to not interact with those kind of people, to not use sorcery, to not go that way because that was deemed evil. But funny, funny, this God engages the outsiders, engages someone else, engages the people that you're like, you would never expect those people to be some of the first people to come and to worship. Because if you think about it, how many people saw that star? And what that star is debated, but that's really not the point, all right? How many people were looking at the stars or looking at the sky and saying, oh, that is beautiful, and just kept on with their life? How many people never took time to even look at the star? Because was the star just like a secret star that only they could see? Or maybe the whole world could see it, but only one group of people noticed it. God spoke to the outsiders using their language, using their gifts, using their culture, to the point where the Magi, the outsiders, move for miles and miles and miles and move all of their things and go. And I love this. Because when it comes to the outsiders, usually what we do is it's a threat, right? We see something different from us. We see something that's foreign to us. And we're like, well, no thanks. We usually respond in fear. And here, the Magi, they're like, we're moving. Something is happening in the heavens that is going to manifest itself on this earth, and we are not going to miss it. They notice, and they move. Which leads me to my next point, because then we have some unexpected kings. So they know that this the king of the Jews is going to be there, and they know this king's going to happen. So obviously, where do they go? Because they don't go to Bethlehem. In the story, they first go to Jerusalem, because that is where kings should live, right? You go to where the power is. You go to where, like, the other king is, and of course this king's going to be really excited about this. They show up, and they're like, hey, Herod, how you doing, bud? Where is this king of the Jews? Note, this is the first time that anyone attributed the word king of the Jews. Came from the outsiders who came to the power, who sit out of a place of honor, respect, and love. If you fast forward a little bit of time, the Roman Empire puts on the cross, king of the Jews. Right? So here they show up and they're like, where is this king? Because you expect to find a king who's going to be in the place of power. Little did they know this king is very different. Little did they know that this King Herod is different. Because Herod says, wow, that's really great news. I'm really happy. Right? And if you don't know the rest of the story, if you read a little bit on, Herod orders all the two-year-olds, the men or males, 2 years and younger, to be killed, murdered, slaughtered. Kick down the door of the house, go in there and grab the kid, walk out. No questions asked. That'd be tragic. Because this king saw this other king as a threat. He gets his the people of their time saying, hey, you know a lot about this, and they tell him the prophecy, and so that he sneaks secretly with the Magi, and they have no idea. They're like, hey, Herod's come down to meet with us in secret. I wonder why. He must love us, right? And he says, hey, go find this king. And when you find him, tell me so that I may worship him as well. That's why I said wink, wink, right? Essentially, it's tell me where he is so then I can go murder him so that I can have all the power. All the power. And so the Magi get up because they want to see this king. They want to worship. And that's the last part, is there's unexpected worship. When they show up, it says the star moved, right? And so, however, Bethlehem is just it's like a suburb of Jerusalem. So they make their way, and they find this baby. And I love this. When they saw the baby and they saw Mary, they bow down and they worship. When you see something beautiful, when you see a holy moment, and that holy moment can look different from person to person. When you see the divine show up, it stops you. When you see something larger than yourself, something that is totally unexpected, you pause, it stops you, and you get low, and you receive it. And it says they bow down and they worship. And how did they worship? They gave. We talked about it earlier. They gave the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, all our favorite things. I know, right? You're like, a little bit more myrrh in my life, I think I'd be better off, right? And these gifts would be appropriate to give to a brand new king, baby or adult, whoever got crowned. This would be the appropriate gifts of that time to give to them, saying, you are worthy of the finest things in this world. They gave their best. So this unexpected group of people, these outsiders who are deemed even evil, they show up. And it's not like Mary sees the Magi and says, get out of here, right? We don't want your kind here. She receives the unexpected visitor. You have unexpected people where this unexpected God who comes as unexpected king in an unexpected place, and the result is good and beautiful. The result is life. The result is love and joy. And all of a sudden, where the circle was, where the Israelites at one point saying, no, this is the only place where the divine can come. This is the only place where we can receive blessing. There's that circle around them. All of a sudden, God comes and says, starts a race in line, and it just gets a little bit bigger. For those who were pushed out, for those who are marginalized, for those who we left behind, for those we deemed unworthy, God says, but I have now come to bring you good news. I have come to restore all things. I've come to bring hope and love, and you're included. So here's my invitation to you this Christmas season. Like, keep with the expected. Like, if the expected with the divine is for you to read your Bible, keep doing those. If it's going for a walk, whatever it might be, keep those things. But lift your eyes up. Look around the room, friends. Look around the party. Look around the office. Look around the heavens. And look for the star. Everyone else might be missing it. But look for the divine, because divine, that star is going to show up. That divine is going to invite you into something incredibly rich if you're willing to see. And it might be through at the table and your nephew spills milk out of her nose or down his nose, all right? And then in that moment, you laugh and there's that connection. You been there? It can be through the nose, right? It can be through like crazy Uncle Gary's story you heard 100 times. In that moment, there could be the divine. It could be in the quietness at night. Listen to your baby sleep. It might be through a great joke. It might be through a story or a book. It might be just going to bed early, whatever it might be. God is there. God shows up in unexpected ways. And if you're willing to see and you're willing to receive, there can be some worship. Speaking of which, let's stand. I'd love to pray for us. N.T. Wright, who's one of my favorite scholars, he wrote this about the story. He says, listen to the whole story Matthew is saying. Think about what it meant for Jesus to be the true king of the Jews and then come to him by whatever route you can and with the best gifts you can find. Let me pray. So, Jesus, we love you. And I thank you that the unexpected, I thank you for the outsiders. And I thank you for the different. That we're all welcome to the table. And that when you came to us as a little baby, where you showed up was not in the places everyone expected. That the way that you worshiped was not expected. The way that you loved was not expected at the time. The way that you touched people was not expected. The tables you went to were not expected. But what everyone received was heaven. What everyone received was love. And I just pray for my friends right now who feel they're the unexpected. They're the pushed out. They're the held down. But what they really expect is that I will never get anything good. Holy Spirit, will you come? And will you move in an unexpected way to my friends? Will you fill their hearts with hope, with purpose, that they matter, that they count? And even though other people have told them you don't matter, you don't count by who you are, the color of your skin, by what you believe is different from me, we just say no. Will you come? And I pray this week as we move around that we will see the star, that we will be stopped by your holiness, we'll be stopped by your beauty, and in those moments we can receive it and we can worship. And we love you. Amen. So thank you for being in this sacred space with me, friends. I'm gonna invite our ministry team to come up. And we take time to pray for each other because that's just what friends do. Sometimes you just need a friend who can listen to you and say, me too, and pray. And here's what I wrote down. This could be for you. It might be for one of you. It could be for a lot of you. But if this is for you, I encourage you to stick around for a little bit, worship for a little while, and if you'd like to come up and allow one of these fine people to pray for you. It's what I prayed earlier, but this is what I wrote down. What you expect is to be out. You are not accepted. You feel like you're damaged goods. And the unexpected for you is that you would ever be loved. You feel like the unexpected is, I will never be loved again by the divine or by a friend, or whoever that might be. My invitation is that is not true. You are not damaged goods, but you are really good and beautiful. And if you need a little bit of hope, you need a little encouragement in that, man, we'd love nothing more to pray for you. If there's anything else in your life, please come up and get prayer and have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week in the gym.